The Yellow River, often called the cradle of Chinese civilization, flows for thousands of miles across northern China, its waters sometimes a gentle life-giver, sometimes a devastating force of nature. It was along the middle and lower reaches of this very river, amidst its fertile but unpredictable plains, that the first stirrings of what would become a complex and enduring civilization began to take shape. For centuries, prior to any written records, various Neolithic cultures thrived, cultivating millet, raising livestock, and crafting intricate pottery. But a truly centralized, state-level society, with kings, cities, and organized governance, remained an elusive prospect. Then, according to ancient Chinese tradition, around 4 millennia ago, a pivotal moment arrived, heralding the birth of the Xia and Shang dynasties. The story of early dynastic China, however, is not a simple linear narrative. It is a tapestry woven with threads of archaeological discovery, ancient texts, and scholarly debate. Unlike the later, well-documented empires, these foundational dynasties exist partly in the realm of legend and partly in the hard-won findings of modern archaeology. To understand the birth of Chinese civilization, we must delve into this intriguing interplay between myth and material evidence, starting with the enigmatic Xia dynasty. For many Chinese, the Xia dynasty, traditionally dated from approximately 2070 to 1600 BCE, represents the very beginning of their dynastic history. It is the genesis story of the imperial system, a time when a new form of leadership emerged, moving beyond tribal chiefs to hereditary rule. Yet, for many international scholars, the Xia remains a contested legacy, a name that resonates deeply in later historical accounts but lacks definitive contemporary proof from the period itself. The primary source for our understanding of the Xia comes from texts compiled centuries, even millennia, after its supposed existence. The most influential of these is the Shiji, or Records of the Grand Historian, authored by Sima Qian around the 1st century BCE. Sima Qian, a meticulous chronicler, synthesized earlier oral traditions and fragmented written records to construct a grand narrative of Chinese history, beginning with the legendary Yellow Emperor and continuing through the Xia, Shang, and Zhou dynasties to his own time. In his account, the Xia was not merely a collection of disparate tribes but a unified realm, ruling over the Yellow River Valley, whose succession was based on familial lines rather than merit, setting a precedent for millennia of dynastic rule. The foundational figure of the Xia, according to these ancient narratives, is Yu the Great. His story is one of heroic leadership and immense public service. Before Yu, the Yellow River was a force of chaos, its annual floods wiping out crops and villages, bringing widespread suffering. Attempts to control these waters through barriers and dikes had failed repeatedly. Yu, however, proposed a different approach. Instead of resisting the river's power, he sought to channel it, to dig canals and dredge riverbeds, guiding the floodwaters harmlessly to the sea. This monumental hydraulic engineering project, described as lasting 13 years and requiring immense labor, finally tamed the river. The success of this endeavor, achieved through Yu's tireless dedication and selflessness, it is said he passed his home 3 times without entering. So consumed was he by his work, earned him the ultimate authority. He became the first monarch of the Xia, not by conquest, but by demonstrating unparalleled ability and commitment to the welfare of his people. This narrative of a virtuous leader earning the mandate of heaven through his actions, rather than mere birthright, would profoundly influence later Chinese political philosophy. However, just as Yu epitomized virtuous rule, the traditional accounts also present Zhai, the last king of the Xia, as the embodiment of decadence and tyranny. His rule is depicted as marked by cruelty, self-indulgence, and a complete disregard for his subjects' suffering. Such moral failings, according to Chinese historiography, inevitably lead to the loss of heaven's favor and the downfall of a dynasty. This recurring theme, the righteous founding, the period of prosperity, the eventual decline through corruption, and the violent overthrow, becomes a fundamental pattern in the cyclical understanding of Chinese history. So, where does archaeology fit into this rich tapestry of legend? The central point of contention and fascination lies with the archaeological site of Erlitou, located in modern-day Henan province. Excavations at Erlitou, which began in the late 1950s, have unearthed the remains of an astonishingly sophisticated Bronze Age culture that flourished from approximately 1900 to 1500 BCE. This chronological fit, overlapping neatly with the traditional dates for the Xia dynasty, immediately piqued the interest of scholars. What makes Urartu so compelling? The site is vast, covering an area of around 300 hectares, and reveals a level of organization and complexity previously unseen in the region. Archaeologists have uncovered foundations of large, palatial buildings, suggesting a centralized administrative and ritual center. These structures were built on elevated platforms, hinting at their importance and the social hierarchy of the community. Evidence of urban planning, including possible road networks and specialized workshop areas for bronze casting, pottery production, and jade working, points to a well-organized society with distinct labor divisions. Crucially, Urartu has yielded a wealth of bronze artifacts. These are not merely simple tools but include elaborate ritual vessels, weapons, and ceremonial objects, demonstrating advanced metallurgical skills, particularly in piece mold casting, a technique that allowed for intricate designs. The presence of sophisticated bronze technology, along with jade ornaments and elaborate tombs indicating social stratification, strongly suggests the existence of an early state-level society, one capable of mobilizing significant labor and resources. For many Chinese archaeologists, Urartu is the capital of the Xia dynasty. They point to the site's scale, its timeline, its location, and the advanced culture it represents, arguing that it aligns perfectly with the textual descriptions of the Xia. The very development of such a complex society, they contend, must have required the kind of centralized political authority attributed to the Xia kings. However, not all scholars, particularly outside China, are convinced. The skepticism centers on the lack of direct evidence linking Urartu to the name Xia. No inscriptions found at Urartu explicitly mention Xia or any of the rulers named in the Shiji. While the site clearly represents a powerful and advanced early state, critics argue that equating it directly with the Xia dynasty risks imposing later historical narratives onto archaeological data without conclusive proof. It is entirely possible, they suggest, that Urartu represents a proto-Shang culture, or perhaps another powerful polity that existed in the Yellow River region during that period, one whose name has simply been lost to history. The debate highlights a fundamental tension in understanding early history. How do we reconcile rich literary traditions, passed down through generations, with the often silent and fragmented evidence unearthed from the earth? Until an inscribed artifact unequivocally stating Xia is found at Urartu, the debate will likely continue, leaving the Xia dynasty as a fascinating, albeit still somewhat shadowy, prelude to fully documented Chinese civilization. If the Xia dynasty remains somewhat elusive, shrouded in a mist of legend and scholarly debate, the subsequent Shang dynasty bursts forth into history with undeniable clarity and vivid detail. Dated approximately from 1600 to 1046 BCE, the Shang represents a monumental leap in the development of Chinese civilization, an era unequivocally confirmed by a wealth of archaeological evidence. This is the period when Chinese civilization truly takes on a recognizable form, characterized by monumental architecture, advanced bronze technology, and most significantly, the earliest extensive corpus of Chinese writing. The most extraordinary and illuminating discovery about the Shang dynasty comes from its unique practice of divination, recorded on what are known as oracle bones, Jiaguwen. These are pieces of turtle plastrons, the lower shell and ox scapulae shoulder blades inscribed with ancient Chinese characters. The process was quite fascinating. Shang kings, or their appointed diviners, would pose questions to their royal ancestors or to Dai, also known as Shangdi, the supreme deity. These questions concerned every aspect of Shang life, whether the harvest would be good, if an upcoming battle would be victorious, the cause of an illness, or even the auspiciousness of a royal hunt or a planned childbirth. The question would be meticulously inscribed on the bone. Then, a heated bronze rod would be applied to small hollows drilled into the back of the bone. The intense heat would cause the bone to crack, and the patterns of these cracks were interpreted as divine answers. Crucially, the question, the interpreted answer, and sometimes even the actual outcome of the event were then carved onto the bone. These oracle bone inscriptions represent the earliest systematic and extensive body of Chinese writing. They are not mere pictographs but a complex, fully developed logographic script, the direct ancestor of modern Chinese characters. They provide an unparalleled window into Shang society, offering insights into their political structure, religious beliefs, economic activities, daily concerns, and even their astronomical observations. From these terse, often poetic inscriptions, we learn the names of kings, the structure of their court, the names of deities, and the rituals performed to appease them. They reveal a society deeply preoccupied with the spiritual world and the influence of ancestors on the living. Beyond the written word, the Shang dynasty is perhaps best known for its extraordinary mastery of bronze metallurgy. The Shang bronze industry was not just advanced for its time, it was arguably one of the most sophisticated in the ancient world. Unlike the Near East, where bronze was often hammered or cast in simple open molds, the Shang developed and perfected the piece mold casting technique. This allowed for the creation of incredibly intricate, three-dimensional designs and precise, sharp edges. Shang bronzes were not primarily utilitarian objects for everyday use, although some bronze tools and weapons did exist. Their most prominent function was ritual. Elaborate bronze vessels such as the magnificent Ding tripodal cauldrons for cooking or holding food offerings, Gu Tal beakers for wine, and Jiu goblets for drinking wine were central to ancestor worship ceremonies and feasts. These vessels were often adorned with stylized animal motifs, particularly the fearsome Taudia mythical beast mask with prominent eyes, whose exact meaning remains debated but certainly conveyed power and religious significance. The sheer volume, size, and artistic quality of these bronzes speak to the immense resources the Shang elite could command and the central role that ritual played in their society. Control over bronze production, a complex process requiring access to copper and tin ores, specialized artisans, and significant organization, was undoubtedly a key source of royal power. The physical manifestation of Shang power and wealth is best seen in their urban centers and monumental royal tombs. The last Shang capital, Anyang, located in modern-day Henan province, is perhaps the most extensively excavated and revealing site. Known archaeologically as Yingxiu, the ruins of Yinyin being another name for the Shang dynasty, Anyang was a sprawling complex of palaces, ancestral temples, residential areas, and specialized craft workshops, including enormous bronze foundries, pottery kilns, and bone carving centers. This testifies to a highly organized society with specialized labor. Even more striking are the vast royal cemeteries at Anyang. These tombs are monumental underground chambers, often cruciform in shape, accessed by ramps, and filled with an astonishing array of grave goods. Bronzes, jades, pottery, lacquerware, and even chariots with horses were interred with the deceased king or queen, signaling their status and belief in an afterlife. The most famous discovery at Anyang is the tomb of Lady Fu Hao. She was a consort of King Wu Ding, one of the most powerful Shang kings, whose reign is extensively documented on oracle bones and, remarkably, a military general who led her own campaigns. Her tomb, exceptionally well preserved and undisturbed, yielded an unprecedented treasure trove of over 1,900 artifacts, including more than 400 bronze vessels and weapons, 750 jade objects, and numerous bone carvings. The sheer wealth of her burial goods offers a rare and intimate glimpse into the life of a powerful Shang noblewoman. Perhaps the most unsettling, yet historically significant, aspect of the Anyang tombs is the pervasive evidence of human sacrifice. Alongside the kings and queens, numerous individuals were interred, often without coffins, sometimes dismembered, and clearly sacrificed. These sacrificial victims, believed to be captives of war or even slaves, were offered to accompany the deceased in the afterlife or to appease ancestors and deities during other rituals. This practice underscores the brutal, highly stratified nature of Shang society, where human life was expendable in service of the elite and the spiritual realm. The Shang political structure was hierarchical, with the King Wang at its apex. He was not just a political and military leader, but also the supreme religious authority, the intermediary between the human world and the powerful ancestral spirits and Dai. Through divination and ritual, he sought to maintain harmony and secure blessings for his realm. Below the king was a ruling aristocracy of royal family members, nobles, and military commanders who controlled land and resources. The vast majority of the population were commoners, farmers, and artisans who provided labor and sustenance, alongside an unfree class, possibly slaves, who were at the very bottom of this social pyramid. The Shang kings exerted direct control over their core territories, but also relied on a network of regional lords who, while semi-autonomous, paid tribute and provided military support, hinting at a proto-feudal system. Shang religion was dominated by ancestor worship. The Shang believed that their ancestors, especially the royal ancestors, continued to exist in the spirit world and could influence the affairs of the living. Offerings and sacrifices were made to them, and their guidance sought through divination, hoping to secure their blessings and avoid their wrath. Dai or Shangdi, the supreme deity, was also central to their cosmology, controlling natural phenomena like rain, wind, and thunder, and ultimately influencing human destiny. Like all dynasties, the Shang eventually met its end. Traditional accounts, echoed in later texts, attribute its downfall to the moral failings of its last king, Daizin, also known as King Zhu of Shang. He is depicted as a cruel, debauched, and tyrannical ruler whose extravagance and neglect alienated his people and nobles alike. This narrative, again, aligns with the cyclical pattern of dynastic rise and fall. Capitalizing on the Shang's internal weaknesses, arising power from the West, the Zhu, led by the virtuous King Wen and his son King Wu, launched a rebellion. The Zhu presented themselves as righteous liberators, chosen by heaven to overthrow the corrupt Shang. They introduced the pivotal concept of the Mandate of Heaven Tianming, which legitimized their conquest. Heaven bestows its mandate on a just ruler, but withdraws it from a tyrannical one, allowing a new dynasty to rise. This concept would serve as a powerful ideological foundation for Chinese dynastic rule for the next three millennia. The Xia, as evidenced by the Erlitou culture and especially the Shang dynasties, despite the ongoing debates about the former, laid the indisputable foundations for what would become one of the world's longest-lasting civilizations. This period witnessed the emergence of the state, a centralized political entity capable of organizing vast populations and resources. Urbanism developed, with planned cities serving as administrative and ritual centers. Crucially, technological advancements, particularly in bronze metallurgy, provided the elite with powerful tools for warfare and ritual, cementing their authority. The birth of a complex writing system, as seen on the oracle bones, was perhaps the most enduring legacy. It allowed for detailed record-keeping, sophisticated administration, and the transmission of knowledge across generations, fundamentally shaping Chinese culture and identity. Society became highly stratified, with clear hierarchies of rulers, nobles, commoners, and a servile class, supported by specialized labor. Religious and ritual practices, especially ancestor worship and divination, established traditions that would deeply influence later Chinese spiritual life. Finally, the ideological frameworks that emerged, the idea of divine authority, the concept of a moral government, and the cyclical nature of dynastic change provided the conceptual bedrock upon which future empires would be built. While debates continue about the definitive link between Erlitou and the textual Xia, the precise extent of Shang territorial control, the full interpretation of every oracle bone inscription, or the exact scale and purpose of human sacrifice, these discussions only highlight the richness and complexity of this formative era. The early dynastic period of the Xia and Shang was not merely a prelude. It was the crucible in which the fundamental elements of Chinese civilization were forged, setting the stage for thousands of years of continuous cultural and political development.